Welcome to the Take 92 podcast. This is Sammy Warmhands. Today I'll be joined in the studio with my friend, a talented young artist named Gradient, and we're going to talk about his trajectory into rap music, as well as the creative process, and we might even take a couple of personal detours and maybe even talk about Juggalos, because I don't know what the hell they really are. Thanks for joining us.
It's an honor and a pleasure and a privilege.
Today we have with us Gradient, my friend Thomas, who's an MC from Eugene, also from Minnesota, is attending the prestigious Carleton University.
Carleton College. That's okay.
See,
it's funny, we get mixed up with, there's this not very good university, sort of middle-of-the-road university in Canada called Carleton University.
Really?
And we don't, yeah. I mean, it's not like, oh, we don't want to be associated
with
them.
And you don't fuck with that. You're like, no. Uh-uh.
Well, I don't know.
I see it. Yeah. You've been there, what, 1, 2 years now? 2 years?
2 years. I'm already a prick.
Yep. Yep. I get the air of pretension now when I see you. No, I'm just kidding.
No, cool.
So you were just talking about the nostalgia of walking in here.
Totally.
So let's tap right into that,
because
this is really weird. Our history, I think, in that. So I started this podcast as one of the things to commemorate the 10-year anniversary of Take 92. That's my company that I started when I moved into this house just over 10 years ago, and built my studio and started recording bands here and you know, kind of evolved into what it is now. And at the time, I was working at Guitar Center. And one of my customers, regular customers, was your dad, Bill. And, you know, every time he'd come in, we'd chat for a while. And one day he came in just covered in dirt and paint. And, I mean, he looked like he was just in a room where just shit exploded all over him. And I was like, what? What's up with your clothes, man? And he's like, oh, I'm getting my my rental property cleaned up. And I was like, I'm looking for a place. Where is it at? And he's like, River Road. And I said, I live River Road. Where at? And he said, 1300s. I'm like, I live 1300s. Where is it? And it was like, I don't know, 300 yards from my mom's house where I was living. And so I didn't know you at the time. I think you were already probably in school with my brother, Travis.
Well, no, this would have been, I was probably in middle school.
Because 2005?
Yeah, that was me in fifth grade.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I hadn't met Travis for another 3 or 4 or 5 years, maybe.
So did you meet at?
We met at North.
At North
Eugene in high school.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a year above me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking you guys were the same grade for some reason.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, then years later, I can't remember where we first met. I remember running into you at CD World.
Yeah, well, I know of you. I knew of you because my dad would sort of talk about this guy Sam, who was the Guitar Center guy, and he's running the new property and stuff. And,
sure, yeah. And there was only a few months actually where he was our landlord, and then my folks bought it out, and so then there was like this period where I didn't see him or you, and so then I started seeing you come around.
Yeah,
here and
yeah,
there.
It was a little gap period for a couple of years, I'd say, and then Travis was always really happy to promote your stuff and your ill stuff predominantly, and your DFS stuff, you know, whether it's wearing the shirts or just letting people know about it. And so, you know, I just thought it was cool and interesting that somebody around here was doing hip hop, because I didn't really know about anybody locally doing it, because this would have been me in ninth grade. What was I, like 14 at the time? And I had been a little bit into music the year prior in eighth grade. I had just started to pick up a guitar because, you know, like you said, my dad was a customer, frequent customer of Guitar Center and every other music shop in a 30-mile radius, and he had tons of instruments.
Yeah,
always way too many instruments in the house. So I'd grown up with an interest in music and with a pretty diverse taste in music. And so I guess I had just heard that, oh, so this guy's doing some rap stuff, and I heard it and I thought it was pretty cool. And then maybe one of the first times I ever saw you was probably at CD World at like an in-store or something like that.
Yeah. I remember crossing paths at like, I don't remember if it was Atmosphere or something. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until later on where I actually put it together that like, oh, Thomas is Bill's son. Like, okay, that makes sense. And then fast forward a few more years and we get, a little better acquainted and then, you know, you've been supporting my music for a long time and always like the first, still to this day, the first guy on the pre-order, the moment it's announced, it's like, damn, that 5 minutes, Jesus. First
I get order. The email, I mean, you know? The email notifications.
Yeah. So, and so, yeah. You know, always supported me there. And then, you decided to pick up the mic yourself and, then Gradient was born.
Yeah.
So tell me about that process. You wrote about it a little bit in a song that your first rap was in school.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess that's true. I grew up really listening to, what I really grew up listening to was with the Beatles and the Beach Boys and a little bit of the Who.
Yeah.
And just those sounds just blew my mind. And I remember at the Lane County Fair one year, must have been 2002 or something, I saw the Beach Boys there.
Awesome.
And it was really cool. It was really cool. I remember they played Good Vibrations. That was my jam. Mm. But then somehow, I think it was the Marshall Mathers LP came into my consciousness and just sort of blew me away.
It was hard not to hear it around that time.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Exactly. I sort of by choice, and this wasn't something my dad pushed on me, but by choice, I would always get the edited versions of CDs. And so I just
by
didn't
choice.
Like, I didn't like hearing cuss words. My sister thought it was
so
silly.
Fuck you. Yeah. Cause I was forced to buy some of that shit and I hated it.
Yeah, no. The best one is the second track, Kill You, which is actually asterisk, 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 you on the edited version. Yeah. Right. And the chorus is you don't wanna with Shady.
Why?
Cause Shady will you. I kid you not.
They couldn't even put the ing
no.
in there. That's funny, man.
I think probably at a certain point he thought it was so funny. I would think Marshall thought it was so funny. Why am I calling him Marshall? I don't know the dude.
Eminem, you guys go way back, don't you?
Eminem probably thought it was so funny to have that long gap in there. He's probably like, take out that ing, man. This is kind of funny. Because it's almost a parody of its own vulgarity.
Really. Because, I mean, that album... I specifically remember hearing Eminem for the first time. I was at my cousin Matt's house, and they had a two-story house, and the kids' rooms were like downstairs, opposite end, and so, you know, he could just play me whatever. Not like he was a bad kid or whatever. He was always, you know,
sure,
like he was a drama kid, really. But like, I remember being back there and we listened to Smashing Pumpkins and whatever. And he's like, oh man, you got to hear this guy. You'd love this. Mm-hmm. And he played Role Model. And I was like, oh my God, from the Slim Shady LP. I remember,
don't you want to grow up to be just like me?
Yeah. And I remember going back to my friend Rick and he bought the album because my parents were really on top of what I was buying.
Sure.
Eagle Eye. Because they knew, you know, they knew that I was into, like, the more fuck you it had, the more I was going to want it, you know. And so my friend Rick had it, and I was at his house, like, every day, and I remember hearing that tape for the first time, just like, I cannot believe the shit this guy
seriously
is saying. And it's like, it's cartoony, but it's also just really vulgar. But it's also really clever.
Yeah.
And just the imagery and stories were great. When the second one came out, it was just, I was in eighth grade at the time, and I remember all of my friends, like everybody I knew was just like, holy shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was the biggest, I mean, I can't make a modern comparison to like that kind of a statement where an artist comes out and they get XYZ reaction just from everyone.
Well,
and then their second album is just a whole response to it.
Yeah.
You know, it was really, really well done.
That's a great point.
You know,
Rolling Stone said that Eminem is the biggest rapper of all time, and I don't think that he'll ever be eclipsed.
Well, just in his ability to... in terms of record sales and stuff, I mean, there's no argument there.
Sure, and the way that he opened up that style of music to, you know, he talks about a lot, even on the Eminem show, too, white America, he's talking about.
Little Erica looks like,
exactly, or whatever it was. And he's just poking fun at the fact that he's coming into these suburban homes and his music is...
His mom's probably would have never gave two squirts of piss created so much motherfucking turbulence.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, so
there's a lot of fucks in this episode. I'm going to apologize now to whoever doesn't know us and is just tuning in.
No problem. But it's funny, when you talk about fucks and all that, like I said, I grew up on the censored versions by my own volition.
Yeah.
And so when I listen back, sometimes I'll have sort of the edited version memorized I'll just not know what the swear word is that gets bleeped out. And so little things that are like, oh my God, that's what he really said. Like on Role Model, you mentioned, he says, well, I always heard it as, I'll tie a rope from my... and jump from a tree.
I'll tie a rope around my penis and I'll jump from a tree.
I just assumed it was his neck and that they just, you know, nope, it wasn't. It was a little bit more, yeah.
I guess those edits are doing their jobs then.
Yeah, I guess so.
You weren't able to take it there.
I guess so.
That's funny, man. I was like the opposite of that in that I remember being pretty much okay. Like my parents were aware of what I was buying and, you know, it wasn't too bad, you know, it was, you know, Green Day and Offspring and, you know, that kind of stuff, Beastie Boys. And then I was like, before I had a band, I was learning to play guitar, and I learned how to play this song from Dookie called FOD.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, this song works really well just by itself. Do you think I could play it for the talent show? And they're like, oh, let's hear it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I like performed FOD for my parents, which stands for fuck off and die. And like, it's a totally nice, normal song. And then like the end is the twist where he lets you have it. And I just didn't compute that, like, this is a bad thing. Like, it's music. It's, you know.
Yeah.
It's an art form. It's not, like, real life. You know, and so I sang it for them. And they're like, what is this? And they took away my tape. And then after that, it was all, like, you know, you can't buy anything with the stickers on it and all that. And
yeah.
I mean, I used to even make, just to go the full opposite direction, I would make... dubs that were front and back cassette, just the swear words, just the curses. So it'd be like,
why?
You know, so it'd be like Real Big Fish, and then Tupac. I was like, man, Tupac really says fuck really well. Like, it's just got so much authority. And we would just make them for fun. I was like, oh, we're not allowed to listen to this shit, huh? Okay, well, let's just make a whole fucking. I don't know where they are now, but me and Chase used to do that. We would just dub all the fucks and shits and whatever. It was like, to be, you know, contrary, just to be rebellious.
That's funny. So you had enough fucks for the two of us, really?
Yes.
Because I wasn't getting any.
Yes. another thing about the Eminem album, the Marshall Mathers LP, we're talking about the edited version.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume now you have the regular one as well.
Yes.
I thought one thing that was really interesting about that album is that it was so offensive and so foul. I mean, if you listen to a song like Kim,
crazy.
I don't think that a mainstream artist will ever make a worse song in terms of content and something that just leaves me feeling sick when I hear it.
Yeah.
You know, I've listened to that album hundreds of times. I've heard that song maybe four times.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it every time it's a skipper. It's just so bad.
Yeah.
And yet, they censor a couple lines on the album.
Uh huh.
On the explicit version, they censored a couple lines.
Yep.
Not from that song, though. Just the part where they're like, we can get into legal trouble, so we better not. You know, they're like, I take six kids from Columbine, stand them all in line. Yeah. You know, like that whole thing.
Yep.
Which, by the way, is just a genius play on that Rakim verse. Mm-hmm. But man, I was blown away that there was still more shit.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. They didn't even put that song Kim on the edited version. I don't know if you've heard.
Oh, really?
They replaced it with a different song called The Kids. Have you ever heard that one?
Oh, that's what that's from.
Yeah.
That's the one with the South Park voices and
stuff? It is. It is. It's a funny one.
I have a lot of his, like, B-sides and stuff just from the Napster days, you know, trying to hunt and find all the rare stuff. But
yeah,
I didn't realize that's what it was from.
Well, it's funny to me. I don't know.
That's a better song. I wish they'd put that on the
It's a great song.
On the official.
The chorus of Kim, though, I think is so good.
So long.
Yeah.
Bitch, you did me so wrong.
It's just crazy. Yeah, but it doesn't even sound like it's rapped.
I think the beat is great, too. It's really haunting. It sets the perfect mood.
It is.
And again, I haven't heard it that many times, but it is unforgettable.
And the end part, how the sound effect leads into the 97 Bonnie and Clyde sound effect.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Doing that as a prequel, I'll admit, was really fucking clever.
Yeah.
And the way he thematically tied his first few albums together was really, really well done. And if I had any criticism of the sequel album that came out last year or whatever, I think that those elements seemed a little bit forced.
Sure.
Like the opening track.
I thought
some of it was clever, or like it was a good concept.
Yeah.
But the way some of that stuff was executed in the early work was, I mean, really unparalleled. You don't see a lot of that stuff between separate albums, and seemingly unrelated songs that are just like some aggressive tirade, and then at the end you're like, oh, fuck, dude, that's just great.
Yeah.
You know, you just hear the dragging in the trunk and
I'm just playing America, you know, I love you.
Like, yeah.
All those little things that he would repeat doing.
Yeah. Or having, cool. Like a drug ballad and, and what's the other one?
Come on, everybody.
Come on, everybody. The two, dance songs being placed at the same part of the album. There's a lot of really interesting continuity. Between those first three albums. Encore is really when I started to be... that was really the first time I started to question him at all. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I can live without this one.
Yeah. A lot of stinkers on that one.
So
Eminem was the one who made me think, wait a minute, I could maybe rap too? And I think he did that for a lot of people.
Sure.
That's when I was like, you know, because of how clever it was and as an MC, if anybody out here there has heard my things, you know, I'm just really trying to be clever the entire time pretty much and do things that make me laugh or that I think are funny.
I think that you have a moment like that on my new album, Vacant Eyes. We did a remix of Endless Excuses and actually let's take that tangent. Because
why not?
That's interesting in and of itself. But you had a line on there that I thought was really funny, if you want to share it.
Sure.
The onomatopoeia.
Yeah, sure. I just said, you're making excuses and I don't want to see you. I'm steady making noise like an onomatopoeia, pia, pia. That's two direct hits.
Yeah. I thought that was really clever and just a perfect gradient kind of line where it's silly, but at the same time, nobody else would have thought of it. You know, those are the ones I like myself as something that I come up with that I think is really smart, but it's so unique to me that no one else would have even wanted it.
Sure.
You know, but they laugh when they hear it.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think that's a good line, you know, because it's not only solidify your identity, but it's also a universal appeal, you know. Those two things aren't generally working together in your favor, you know. It's either you have a broad appeal or you have your own niche thing.
Yeah.
So to do both in those moments is really cool.
Yeah, well... One of the things about that line was that you happened to be in Minnesota while I was in Minnesota a couple months ago.
Yes.
And you did a show at just before Soundset at 33rd Realm.
Yes. And I played for four people.
With CMJ and Mike Shank and one other dude I don't remember. Some vulgar name. Something about masturbation.
Vulgar name.
I think. Wasn't there?
Oh, Soft Pour Corn.
Soft Pour Corn. That's what it was.
And MC Rents was also there.
Yes, he was. Definitely. Shout out to those guys.
But
anyway,
Soft Pour Corn.
So I sort of invited myself into your set as I like to invite myself into all of your projects and your life as much as possible.
To be fair, I invited you to this, though.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. And I was going to do a verse for that Endless Excuses song, the original beat. And you had already known that you were going to remix it later, but you didn't know that you were going to have me on it, I think.
Yeah.
And so I wrote that verse in like a night.
Because you asked if you could have any place in the set. And I was like, man, I've got a tight set. I've been playing this, you know, in all these different release shows I've just did. I don't really want to modify my set right now. And I was like, well, the only thing I could think of is I don't have Ogar Burrow with me. And I normally do Excuses.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to, if you have a verse that would fit in Excuses.
Yeah.
And you're such a, like, I'm going to get inspired by just the pressure of creating under a deadline kind of writer that you're like, oh, yeah, no problem. I was like, you've got something that'll fit? And you're like, no, I'll just write something tonight. And I was like, fuck you, man. Okay. And you did. And it was great. And
it mostly worked.
I remember you spit it for me in the parking lot or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, damn, the end of that's like really tight. Because it was really quick and really tricky, too.
Uh-huh.
And then you did it flawlessly. And then during the show, I remember you messed it up. And, and I believe, because I've seen Carnage do this, where he'll spit a verse that's just crazy. But over the music, you're not hearing all the pieces of it.
Yeah.
And so I believe I gave you a Tosh.0 style redemption. And had you just spit it a cappella?
Yeah, you were just like, you know, that end of that verse, he just wrote that last night, but you should give him that again because that was actually really cool and you didn't get it or something. So I did that part. But later when you sent me the Endless Excuses beat, I looked back at that verse. And I ended up pretty much rewrote the whole verse, but the only thing that stayed basically was that I said, making excuses and I don't want to see you. I'm steady making noise like an onomatopoeia.
Yeah.
But I didn't have the pia pia part in until later. I wanted to take that line, but then I was seeing how else I could lead into more stuff. And I sort of improved the line because it was already, I thought it was kind of clever. Like, okay, an onomatopoeia is a
word. Yeah, that it's a good line, but then you took it as a setup at that point.
And then I made it an onomatopoeia. And so it was a reminder to myself that even if I have something that's good, you know, I can still think of ways to make it better.
Yeah.
You know, especially because, you know, you were referencing my sort of pressured deadline writing style.
Yeah.
And I just will write something as quick as I need to get it done before I need to record it. And, you know, every release I've made now, I look back and I have issues with it. And it's because of that.
And
because I haven't done demos.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've really grown to embrace the rewrite process, the revision process a lot, because I think that you do find so many of those little opportunities that you don't necessarily get until maybe you've played the song live half a dozen times and you're like, oh shit, I wish I would have done that, you know. And that's how I play it every time now. So
yeah,
when I get like Facebook messages sometimes from young artists who are just starting out, and they're like, hey, will you listen to my stuff? And
cool.
That's one thing that I always tell them is like, A, your delivery is not very good yet. Because, I mean, fuck, I did probably 8 rap albums before I finally got, oh, this is what I should be doing.
Yeah.
Great. That's the perfect marriage between my live energy and the vibe of, you know, the song and the clarity that I want and whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It took me years to get that where I think has now been consistent for a little while. The other thing is you perform the song, even if you're a band, you know, you perform the song a number of times, and if you record it right away, you're going to notice, oh, our recording isn't quite as good because we do this little bridge differently now. And oh, this melody is slightly different, you know.
Yep.
And I always will tell people, then play the song live. You know, do it at some open mics. Or if you're playing a small show where you're not really worried about, you know, Maybe the people there don't know you at all and it's really low stakes, you know. Bring out some new stuff and work it out there.
Yeah.
You know, and try to find those opportunities to make it more effective, then go in and make the record, you know.
Yeah. Definitely.
I also learned that from Doug, or working with Ogar Burl.
Yeah.
Was that our styles, when we started working together, were polar opposites. That he would put in, like, fewer, more effective words, and I would be way more about the flow of it and trying to cram as much shit in there as possible.
Yeah.
And working with him, I realized, like, part of the revision process can just be removing extra words and syllables that don't need to be there. Occasionally, you'll want to add, like, oh, that if I change this word, then I've got like three multis in a row, and that's really a really nice rhyme.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, it can just be trimming the fat that makes it the message clearer.
Definitely.
I learned that from him because I was always just like, ba 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 ba.
Uh-huh.
Like I am right now.
Uh-huh. Well.
Story of my life.
No. Totally cool. And I was hanging out with Evan Evil the other day, and he was showing me some of his new stuff that he's working on.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about that same thing when I was talking about what I liked about his verse on Finally, which is
I remember you pointing favorite. Out that that was like your favorite verse of the year or something.
Yeah,
I was
essentially. Yeah, I think that's what it was. It was in my favorite verses of must have been 2013.
Yeah.
It's just so to the point.
If anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, that's the from the album Death of a Salesman from my group, The Illusionists, and Evil was the other MC in that group.
Mm-hmm.
So
he was. And you even acknowledged how on point his verse was in the moments leading up to your verse where you just said what he said. You know,
I was talking about my cat actually.
Oh, okay.
There's like the did it, meow, did it. What he said.
That's funny. Okay.
But yeah, it was good. It was good.
Yeah, yeah. And so those sorts of things, he just cuts straight to the point of what he's trying to say, and he sort of acknowledges to me, you know, I'm not the most wordy or the most verbose, person, but I'm just going to tell you exactly what I'm thinking on the record.
Yeah, Evan's really interesting in the way that he... What did I call him? I used to call him Evan Thoughts or something, where if you said something that is like... And I don't mean this in an insulting way, but in a... You could take a complicated subject and have an hour-long debate on it, but if you present that same thing to Evan, he will be able to, in a third grade reading level, give you two sentences that sum up all of it. And you're like, how the fuck do you... like, he's able to really just take things and boil it down to the essentials really well.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that we did well together because, he doesn't necessarily initiate his own songs. A lot of the time, you know, 99% of the time, it was something that I started writing on and then I would give to him. And so he would sit with that concept and then go, okay. You know, and like our first two records we did together, he was kind of the finisher in that, like, I would give him the last verse or whatever. And he was always with the mindset that, like, okay, and my last line is going to sum up everything we just said for 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm like, how the fuck do you think that way? But he's he's really good at it.
Yeah.
Shout out to Evil.
Yeah.
Definitely. I want to get him on one of these soon.
Oh, you should.
But
I think you'd like that.
So let's talk again about your process.
Sure.
So you saw an opportunity, maybe, or you saw something relatable in Eminem and artists like that made you want to start writing, or how long was it before you really...
Yeah, I mean, I've always just really liked words, and I've liked writing prose, and I have a journal that I've kept all the way through high school. So I just like the act of writing, and I like writing and reading and what I've written. And but you know, I think that my confidence that I could maybe do it as an MC and as a rapper came when there was this art project that I had to do for 10th grade. We were reading the book The Odyssey by Homer, and we had to present some sort of art project. So a lot of people made like a ship out of some what are those wooden tongue depressors? Those little those little wooden pieces. Or some people wrote poems, or some people just painted, you know, a picture of Odysseus with Polyphemus, the big Cyclops, or whatever. And I was like, I don't really have any of these talents.
Yeah,
I'm gonna just try to write a rap. So there was this website called Shadowville.com where they had a lot of these really corny hip hop beats that you could download for free.
Oh,
and so I just downloaded this really dumb sort of trap beat.
I guess I just assumed that you did it a cappella.
Oh no, yeah, no, I downloaded a beat, and you know, my dad had like a mixer sitting around. He had like an Audio Technica condenser mic, so I recorded my own chorus.
Okay.
Yeah, so I pre-recorded the chorus. I'm Odysseus, what it do? Something about dissing us and my crew or something like that. Yeah, something silly. And I recorded that, and then I had these verses, and I just performed the song in my class I did the verses, and then I let the chorus, because I had like this vocal effect on the chorus.
And now you don't rap over your own vocals, right?
Well, okay. Here's the
don't fucking do that.
I know. Carnage just posted a picture on Facebook about that today.
Yeah.
Do not rap over your own vocals. I sort of make an exception for choruses a little bit.
That's lame.
I think
that's lame. Get a fucking hype man.
I would never do that for a verse. Obviously, that's like the wackest thing you could do. But for choruses, man, sometimes I need to catch a little bit of a breath.
You know,
and that, so I might.
I get that. I get that.
Uh-huh.
As someone who toured with part of a group for years, and then going to a solo performer, it was really hard to figure that out. But I got it.
Yeah.
I struggled at it for a while, but I got it, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe you need to struggle at it.
True, true. I mean, how many sets have I done? I've done like two or three. I've never really.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Just that record release and a couple other appearances?
I did that record release, which was probably a 45-minute set.
Yeah.
I've never done anything even close to that with rap.
That's weird to me.
The longest rap set I've done outside of that is 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes.
So you have two mixtapes, a full-length album, and at least one project in the works.
Yep.
And the performing, does that not interest you as much, or is it just not presented the opportunity since you're going to school?
I think a lot of it is that opportunity and the time commitment. But for me, when I've been at school the last couple of years, I've had a band that I've been playing with.
Mm-hmm.
And so pretty much all of my free time that I devote to music and creativity has gone towards that band.
Okay.
And so we've done a lot of shows. We'll do a half hour set, you know, all over campus. And we've done that probably 10 or 11 times.
Okay.
But what, you know, that's different. That's singing, and it doesn't put as much tax on my lungs.
Definitely.
You know. Just the way that it's spaced out, and there's instrumental breaks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I would love to, you know, I keep bothering you about, hey, man.
I know.
But it's impossible because of the way that I'm always in Minnesota, but I'm always trying to sneak onto your tours, too.
This
is going to be the ongoing thing of me trying to sneak into everything you do.
Someday, we'll make that work with our schedules, you know, because it just, unless we're doing it on winter break or something.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
And I don't want to be driving anywhere on winter break.
Yeah.
So
that's fair.
Here's something I wanted to ask you about.
Sure thing.
One thing that's interesting to me as a listener of yours is that sometimes you'll speak from contradictory point of views. Mm-hmm. I can first say, you did a song where that's kind of like the, I don't want to say gimmick, but that's the premise of the song, you know,
yep.
That you do like one verse bad-mouthing Republicans and one verse bad-mouthing Democrats,
yep.
essentially.
Yep.
That's
Context Combat
yeah.
with Isid.
And I like that song, but that's not exactly what I'm talking about. But from your own personal point of view, mm-hmm. Sometimes you speak as a white person. Sometimes you speak as a Japanese person.
Yeah.
And sometimes you speak as a straight person having relationships with a female, and sometimes you speak from a gay or bisexual point of view.
Yep.
I think that is really interesting as a listener because you're not necessarily riding the middle of those things.
Sure.
You're going, no, I fully experience both of these in some way.
Yeah.
So I just think as a listener that that's really interesting to me. So
cool. Well, I'm glad you noticed.
Any thoughts on that?
That's a great point. That has a lot to do with identity. And you know, I'm going to get to a nugget that I don't think I've ever really told anybody on a big scale about me and my music. But, which is the fact that my rap name, Gradient, right? I was trying to think for a really long time about what name to use when I knew that I wanted to start doing music more. And I was thinking that a lot of people were like, oh man, you should be like Big T or something silly like that, you know? Because I was like, this was, you're like shaking your head. I'm thinking, well, okay, I could have a silly name because I do a lot of silly stuff, and that works, cool. But then when I want to do something serious, no one's going to take it seriously.
Yeah.
Whereas if I have a more neutral or serious name, I can do serious stuff, and maybe that works, but I can also do goofy stuff, and maybe I can sort of try to do both of those at the same time.
Like Sammy Warmhands,
mm-hmm.
people really take me seriously.
Exactly. And so I do a lot of bicycling, and I was going on this trip, I was going to California, and there were a lot of hills. I was going along 101 out on the coast, and the signs will say hill, incline, 8% grade, or whatever. And I just thought about that word grade, and then I thought about gradient, and I just thought that that was a cool, because you can measure the gradient of a hill, which is just its incline, essentially, and I thought that was somehow metaphorically interesting to me in that, you know, life is a lot of ups and downs. But then I was thinking more about the other definitions of that word.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're on Photoshop or whatever,
that's what I think of instantly. Yep, yeah.
And you use the gradient tool. It's also a math term that I don't understand super well. But,
okay.
But if thinking about the gradient tool, the gradient is the like smooth transition between two different colors, right? And on the as a design element. And I think of myself a lot of times when I think of the way that I construct my identity as being somewhere in the middle between a lot of things, whether it is being not straight, but I don't think, you know, I'm not gay, I'm bisexual, and I'm somewhere sort of in the middle there. I am white, but I'm also Japanese, and I'm sort of maybe a person of color. I think of myself as a person of color, but I also experience the world a lot as a white person. So I think of myself as both of those things. I even think about the fact that I come from a very low sort of socioeconomic background in general. But now I have this really big scholarship and I get to go to this really fancy private school. And I'm sort of in between these sort of identities of like how rich or poor I am.
I hadn't thought of that of that one in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting as well.
Or I think of myself as being really, really ambitious, as you know, you would think, and driven, but also really super lazy at the same time. I hold
that one's perfect. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Exactly. So I hold, you know, both parts of a lot of these sort of binaries and a lot of these ends of a spectrum, and I sort of just embrace the fact that that's okay, and I don't have to be, because a lot of people we're very used to defining ourselves in opposition to other things.
Yes,
you know, fuck those guys. You know, fuck the environment. I don't care. I'm gonna drive my truck. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I just, one of my biggest passions is just getting to know all sorts of different kinds of people and relating with all sorts of different kinds of people. And I sometimes it feels like I don't have a strong, single identity. But
it's an inclusive way of thinking.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as dismissive as what you're saying. A lot of our culture is. And I totally get that. I am a person who sees things very much black and white, and I always have. And then the last few years, the more I'm able to just step back and look at everything is so polarized right now.
Super.
We do not need more of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like why I would write a song like Crisis of Conscience or Ferguson Free Ride or something like that. And kind of going like, there are two major schools of thought.
Mm-hmm.
And at no point do you guys intersect anywhere.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah.
You know, let's break it down a little bit further and just on a human element, look at, are we building or are we destroying?
Yeah.
I could see a lot of this now in your music and in just knowing you. Now that I'm kind of digesting this conversation a little bit, I appreciate how much thought you put into that in terms of a name, because a name can mean a lot, and I don't think anyone would have read into it that way before.
The funny thing is, I didn't even really read into it that way until afterwards.
Oh, okay.
I sort of started using it as my name, just thinking it was cool, and then I sort of retroactively applied this meaning to it. And I just figured that's okay. Maybe that's just the way it was meant to be, was I was going to come up with a name and then realize that that's what it really meant.
Well, I respect that too, because no front, no bullshit, no like, oh, I mastermind this thing.
Exactly.
It's a pretty genius name, if I do say so myself. Oh, man.
Exactly. You know, if we're going to talk about another one, I like to be really intellectual. I'm also a juggalo. Like, and I just think that's okay. Like,
now I have to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Because when people hear the word juggalo, if they're familiar with Insane Clown Posse, has a devout group of fans.
To the point of religious fanaticism.
Yeah, that it's almost like a cult-like entity. Now, people who are aware of this, they hear the word juggalo. What I picture
just
is like
a
person with wearing a choke chain, and they've got their just all black everything and their ICP shirt on, and a lot of time they would wear makeup, like high contrast, black and white, blotchy, like almost like the Crow or something, but like, you know, that's the vibe, right?
Yep.
You know, here I am, a rapper who doesn't look anything like a rapper, asking you about what does it mean being a juggalo to you? Because you don't necessarily play the role, but whenever it comes up, you're like, oh yeah, definitely. I'm down with those guys.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely. Great question. I heard ICP for the first time. Maybe this was in my period of wanting to empathize with a lot of people that I didn't understand, or just try to understand people that I didn't understand prior. I was looking on Wikipedia. I think I found an article of world's most hated bands, or list of bands that have been super hated. Nickelback, Creed.
Yeah,
I'd already heard both of them. I knew I didn't like their music very much, but I heard of the Insane Clown Posse, and I never heard of them. And I listened to this album, The Amazing Jekyll Brothers, and the first song, Bring It On, they have these weird carnival beats. All in the background, and it's really cool, and these hard kicks and snares, and they're just rapping about just killing people with chainsaws. And for whatever reason, it spoke to me.
Okay.
And I think as a middle schooler, you just hear someone say something like, I'm twisted, I'll cut your finger off and stick it in your butt. Ah! And glue it shut. Like, and then you're like, okay, that's funny. As a little seventh grade dude, I thought that was funny. And then I probed more into their catalog, and I found that I really liked what they had to say in interviews. And what they really are about, ultimately, is providing sort of a community or being existing as a community for people who maybe don't feel like they have community elsewhere.
Okay.
And that's something that you do not see from the outside looking in. And that's totally understandable.
Yeah.
Because the way that Juggalos present themselves is often...
It's aggressive.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But...
And it seems very... The opposite of what you were just saying, that mm-hmm. your own philosophy is being very inclusive.
Mm.
It seems very confrontational mm-hmm. and very like, uh-huh. you know, mm-hmm. the loner mm-hmm. in the corner yeah. of the school, fuck off, you sure. know, kind of person.
Sure. But from the Juggalo perspective, that's because society has ostracized them. You know, it's a reactive rather than a proactive
Well, what
approach.
I'm seeing is parallels now in mm-hmm. what drew me to punk rock.
Sure.
In those same years of my life. Was
yeah.
that it was so inclusive and just accepting, you know, these are the people that don't
yeah.
think the same way as everybody, and they yeah. don't. So I guess I understand that a little bit better now than I did, because
sure.
it always seemed very strange to
sure.
me in more of a destructive way, because the punk rock music is obviously rebelling against something, you
yep.
know, but. With ICP, it's always just like, fuck you, stomp your head. And I was like, yeah, I don't yeah, yeah. see the value in this.
Yeah, yeah. And I could point to a lot of examples of ICP songs that are, for one thing, over the decades, and they've been doing music for over 25 years, they've been more devout in sort of talking about God. They talk a lot about God these days
now,
on their
now,
newest two albums.
I've heard a thing about, mm-hmm. I don't want to talk too much about this.
No, we don't have to. I don't want to co-opt the whole.
But this is very interesting, because I heard a few years back that they were outed as being, like, basically antithetical, antithetical
mm-hmm.
To yeah. their entire body of work, basically, because weren't they...
Well, okay, so 2002 happens, and I know you don't want this to be the Juggalo show.
Sure, but cliff notes.
Sure, sure. 2002 happens, and they've put out this is their sixth Joker's card in their sixth Joker's card, like, saga. There's this whole mythology, and if you listen closely, there are a lot of songs about vigilantism and about the people we're killing are racists and they're bigots or they're child molesters, because the experience that those two dudes in ICP had growing up was feeling very victimized. They were both, you know, sexually abused as children, etc. And their music is actually a lot of vigilantism and trying to get rid of the evil people in the world. And they use this really sort of dark, twisted, horror movie type style to draw people in who might that might appeal to. But really, if you listen closely and you know, any real any down ass juggalo, as we would say, would tell you, there's a really strong moral message in there that, you know, doesn't come across in maybe the singles or in the media coverage.
Do you think that's an afterthought, or do you think that's something that's like very cleverly orchestrated? Because the way you described it sounded like it's more of a marketing tactic, their whole sound and presentation. You know?
I think it's just similar to what I was saying earlier. They have a lot of different things that they like to do, and they have a lot of different parts of themselves that they enjoy. They like making their songs where they're just going and killing people, but they also like making songs about, you know, the miracles of life and how magnets work. Anyway, we don't need to go too far down
okay.
this.
All right.
But and
All
I also right. want to make an amendment to something I've said about, you know, putting being intellectual sort of as the antithesis of being a juggalo, because when I've become more vested in this community that I proudly proclaim myself to be a part of, I am aware that there are juggalos who sort of from all walks of life, and there are juggalos who you might not think are juggalos, like someone might not think that I am one when I walk around, but you know, I could recite you full albums of lyrics and just like a lot of other folks could.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. And just full disclosure, I will say that I have also in my early days written songs about murdering child molesters.
Yep.
You know, I've been there. I've had my moments. Sweet. Well, we got a few minutes left. I'm really trying to keep these things casual. I guess one thing I wanted to touch on was kind of where we began. You know, I moved into this place.
Yep.
You were saying how weird it is coming back here every time.
Yeah, in case it wasn't made clear, I used to live in this house as a kid. This is where I grew up.
So, yeah, that's where we were getting is that, so I rented this house from Bill. You know, Bill moved on. My folks bought the place. Years later, I get to know Thomas. And then he hires me to record his album, Ambition.
Yep.
His first original full length. And comes here, and I believe that was the first time you had been here since you lived here. And I'm like, I didn't even fucking know you lived here.
Mm. Yeah.
Was that how that went down?
Well, I'd been here a couple times. I picked up reintroducing the disc.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'd been here a couple times.
Okay.
But yeah, maybe I hadn't made it as clear. You know, walking around here, I feel sort of the nostalgia of knowing, you know, wow, I used to feed quails in this used to be a garage right here.
Yes.
And now you're cutting records here.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, no, it was really, really neat to be able to come back and do that album here, especially doing songs that talk specifically about my childhood. Like,
this neighborhood and stuff.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, you say that I hired you to engineer the album or produce the album. And that's an understatement because, yeah, I did that. But the whole album as a concept grew from you and your clique, you know, the fact that I could even do it. You know, I was getting beats from Crosby, who I never would have known had it not been from you. And you teased me on one of the songs about the fact that I stole a ton of your collaborators.
When I started Take 92, it was for that reason. It was for people like you and people like me who, you know, when I was in, let's say, freshman, sophomore year, something like that, of high school, I had recorded 2 studio records and it was really expensive, and my band couldn't afford to keep doing that.
Sure.
But we were playing all these shows, and we're writing new songs, and so I found this guy who was a couple years older than me at my school named Eric Munch. And I was like, hey, I've heard your band, and I read in the credits that you recorded it yourself. You know, would you be willing to record us? And so, you know, he kind of took us in, and we did these kind of low-budget recordings, and you know, they came out better than the pro studios that we had gone to because he was willing to put in a little more time, you know, with our budget. And
yeah,
he understood the kind of music we were playing, and it was really great.
Familiarity with your genre.
Yeah, and he moved away around just before I graduated, probably around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And, another year later, I saw the opportunity to start recording my own records. My band wasn't working out, and I thought, well, if I'm going to record my own stuff, God, I know so many people around here, other bands that aren't going to be able to make their records. Like, I ought to do that.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of been the intent from the beginning, even though I don't actively try to seek new
clients.
Yeah. New projects all the time. When there's somebody I know and I really think that they have something, you know, That's a record that I want to fight to do. I want to do Black Delaney. I want to do Bear Cub. I want to do, you know, some of those, especially yours. I really enjoyed, that was a crazy project, honestly, because it was like you came in and did we cancel the first session? No, we postponed the first session like 3 times and it ended up being like an 8-hour block went down to 6 and then 4 and then like 90 minutes. And it was like, what the fuck? And you get here, and I was like, all right, dude is just writing like crazy, trying to get prepared. You know, it's his first album. I was like, all right, okay, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And you get here with a thumb drive, or no, it's a little
SD card. Yep.
We plug it in, and I'm like, all right, so let's get started. And you're like, well, here's all the beats for the album.
Yeah.
And they had titles, and you explained the concepts on all of them. And I was like, all right, which one are we going to do? And you're like, no, I was just showing you what it's going to be.
I'm
like,
I hadn't written any of them.
What the fuck are you talking about, man? And honestly, uh-huh. It threw me. And I was like, this kid is fucking up. Like, this is never going to happen. And it happened. And it was a little rocky, but it was great.
Uh-huh.
And I'm super happy with the outcome. Like I said the other day, it was just the anniversary of it, which I didn't remember, but I saw you write about it. And okay. I thought, man, this really is an accomplishment, though.
Cool.
Because there's a lot of people in this scene who are great artists who don't... They're the opposite of you, I guess. They perform all the time.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily put out as many records, or they'll just record a few songs to get them down, you know, for people to have or whatever. But we really did go all in on this thing, and it came out... To me, as an example of a DIY project done right.
I didn't know if I was ever going to make another album. Seeing how much it had cost to get the beats locked down, and Kroz gave me a really great rate. He gave me a really great rate, but just to pay for those and to pay for features, because there were people I just really, really wanted to work with.
Yeah.
It was a big, it was probably like $5,000 or something that I didn't have.
I don't think people understand that just as a solo artist, you bear all of that responsibility yourself. Because when you're in a band and you put out an album, then you have four or five people splitting the cost of this thing.
Yep.
And as a solo artist, there's no safety net. There's no... chipping in, it's all on you. So whether you got to go into crazy debt or sell some guitars or whatever you got to do, that's all you.
Yeah. And paying for the physical printing and even the guy who did all the graphic design, my friend Ken, who was really great. All those things happened, and I had just had this. I sort of had this grand vision for the album. And I knew, that's funny, because grand vision is a rhyme you used with the word ambition on the song Moonlight, or what's it called? On Famous Last Words?
Midnight. Yeah,
Midnight.
I did.
Midnight.
Funny. I didn't even put that together.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. My mind works in tangents.
And mine works in song lyrics, so we're right on the same wavelength here. It's okay.
That's great. And I had said, this is going to come out in August. And we had set in these dates for doing some recording, and I kind of fucked up on the first date. But by then, I had all the features in. I had everything for the record. I had basically the artwork pretty much done. I had all the beats and all the features in. Everything that just was left was all of my voice and all of my words. And so I just sort of had a few nights where I just wrote two or three songs in a night. The very last track we recorded was Eon. And that was just the day before we recorded it, I was just like, this is going to be my lyrical murder song. And I just went that night and just pulled out as many of my goofy references as I could and made it my...
Did you have in any quantity some sort of stockpile of one-liners that you threw into that song?
Yeah, okay.
I did. Some of the stuff I was really surprised that, we'd record... a few songs on a Tuesday, and then I'd be like, all right, let's bounce these. What are we going to work on next? And you're like, well, I think tomorrow I want to do, A, B, and C.
Yeah.
But I haven't written them yet. I'm like, God damn it, man. And then you'd come in with stuff that was so... I mean, some of these lines are so clever. I'm like, there's no way you're just pulling this out of your ass, man. Yeah. Like, how do you...
Yeah. It's all part of my bank, dude. I just have my notes app right now on my phone. It's just my rap app, dude. And it's just constant things that the shower is actually a time when I think of a lot of multis.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just be taking a shower and I'll be like, ba-da-da-da-da-da. Or I don't know, and just okay, I have to write that down. Sometimes I'll even pause the shower, I'll even stop it, and then I'll go to my phone and write it down, and then come back and finish my shower.
I used to do that when I was in a band. I would come up with most of my vocal melodies and hooks in the shower.
So
your writing process then is more or less because you come with a concept in mind. At least when we worked together, you did.
Yep.
And then you pull from some lines or punch lines or whatever that you had written.
Yep.
When you sit down, do you open with a found line and keep writing, or do you go, okay, where do I want to? I mean, how do you put together something like that?
Well, one of my favorite artists is Watsky, and he has a background as a percussionist in sort of high school ensembles, and he's talked about this a lot of the time, where he thinks first in terms of the rhythm of how the lyrics will be delivered, and thinking about it as a percussion piece, and thinking about subdividing. Or whatever.
Almost like having, like I was saying, have the melody before you, you know, sing it, and the words come later.
Yeah.
So you have your cadences and your rhythms first.
Totally. And any beat that I put on, okay, I'll be like, okay, this is how I'm going to rap on it. Mm-hmm. And this is how it's going to sound on when I double it or go double time. But pretty much I know what my flows are going to be. And then sometimes I'll look back in my notes app and see what punchlines I have that can fit into those.
Yeah.
But often I'll just sort of come up with them. Like my song Oregon to Minnesota is just a stream of consciousness. Like I just wrote that on my computer one time. I was like, this Oregonian kid is going in. I had that idea in my head. No end when you let the flow begin. So logical and very geological the way I rock flow since the Devonian.
Like my friend Jessica called out that song the other day that she really liked that song.
Yeah. So I'd say it's different each time, but for the most part, I'm thinking in terms of the rhythm, and I'll inform myself with sort of the punchlines that I've come up with in the past, but then I'll just sit down and sort of write it. And I can crank out. I know that if I wasn't so busy with doing other stuff and school, and the job that I have at my school is the big one.
Excuses. Like I could Isn't that the song we just did?
Yeah, true. Okay, well, you're right. I'll try to come up with another. I'll try to put out another album by 2016,
yeah.
I think
it's doable.
Yeah.
I was asking about your writing process because I carry a pad all the time, mm-hmm. and I have since like eighth grade. And a lot of the illusionist stuff mm-hmm. was I was just constantly writing one-liners all the time.
Yeah.
In my pocket. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of those verses were kind of a patchwork. You know, and once you get to like the end of that period, like Death of a Salesman, my writing changed a lot because you can tell most of it's now just one sitting, you know, mm-hmm. like it, because the whole thing flows together better. It's not as funny. It's not as abrasive.
Sure.
But it has a different flow to it. And so like now when I sit down, occasionally, you know, like I'll need to do a rewrite, like, that line isn't that great. Let me open the book and see what mm-hmm. I have. But most of the time now, the stuff I write down, I never even look at it again. It's kind of weird. It's just like the exercise of doing it, just to kind of keep my mind right, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But my approach has changed a lot doing that. Because I know that's how Evan writes as well, is he just, you know, jots his couplets, you know, over and over and over. I remember when we did Death of a Salesman, at one point he had like 3-4 pages of lyrics for Groundhog Days.
Yep.
And he had them in couplets sprawled out on note cards. Mm-hmm. Like flashcards, mm-hmm. just spread out all over the floor, and he was just arranging the flashcards. He's like, dude, I'm sorry, this is the last song, I just don't fucking know how I'm gonna do this any other way.
Wow.
And I thought it was insane. But he's really fucking efficient with his verses, and his process is totally that way of constructing previous thoughts. Whereas yours is kind of in the middle, and then mine is now less of that. But I think that's really interesting how everybody can rhyme on one song, have a totally different approach to it, and it all sounds like we were just working in the same room.
Oh, yeah. That's a great point.
You know?
Well, one thing that in a similar vein, I want to mention about your writing style is I admire your ability to stay very focused on a topic for a song. I tend to sort of want to bounce around or throw in some comic relief line, like every other bar, it seems like, where your stuff, when I'm thinking about the first verse of Endless Excuses, or I'm thinking about Midnight, or I'm thinking about Fuck the Party or Anti-Fun, whatever, both of them.
Yeah.
It's very just sort of focused on the topic. And for me, a lot of times instead of the doing that kind of thing, for me, cleverness comes first, like things that I think just alliteratively sound cool or just that I think are funny things to say. Those are always kind of come up, and I'm going to keep those. And the rhymes tend to really dictate a lot of stuff that I do also ahead of the topic. And I know you've done stuff like that for sure. But
yeah.
One artist that I have always, one of my all-time favorite rappers is Tech N9ne. And one of the things that makes his music kind of polarizing is he is always going for the rhyme. He's going to go for the complex five-syllable multi, and he might end all 16 bars of a verse. He might end with some five-syllable complex multi, but you don't know what the fuck he said.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know what the hell it was about, but he's doing that. And so... I don't know. I've just always sort of enjoyed that. And it leaves it to be a little more open for interpretation.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of staying focused on and not deviating with like a crowd pleasing line.
Yeah.
I think that I'm only able to do that because this is like my 10th rap album.
Yeah.
I make music because it's like a cathartic exercise. It's a necessary thing for me. But when I started making rap music,
yeah,
it was just to fuck around and laugh. Mm-hmm. And so that's why the albums over the years, the first like four albums are just constant, like, you know, dick jokes and shit talking and just trying to be funny and shocking and clever and whatever.
Sure.
And I think the reason that wore off is because as this became my primary focus, then my primary outlet for musical expression, well, then all of a sudden, now I really have something more to say in it, you know? Because even if you listen to like I did punk stuff with the Illusionists that's straight up just fucking around, you know, it's just a joke for fun.
Totally. Dick Buffet.
You think of Dead Fucking Serious, my punk band, you think that's probably a similar thing. And at the time I started rapping, like DFS was my serious outlet for the shit on my mind. And hip hop was the thing to just get all this funny shit out of my system. So I don't know. I think that it'll be interesting to watch your progression as a writer, the more of these that you've done. Because, I mean, certainly if you compare the mixtapes to the full length, you're already getting a lot more personal content and seeing... you are getting more comfortable looking inward and telling more of your story and stuff.
Sure.
You know, so I think that'll be an interesting evolution. I'm excited to see where the next stuff goes, because I think that you do have the ability to say something, especially like I said, with that unique perspective that not everybody is bringing to the table.
Cool.
I'm excited to see where it goes on the next one.
I love music. I wish it was a bigger fraction of my life pie. But you know, it's pretty much your whole pie. I mean, you have your work that you have to do to sort of fund life.
Yeah. But I'm not present there when
sure,
I'm there. It's
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. But yeah, for me, I just, and I am so interested in a lot of things, and I do photography and I do a lot of stuff. And so sometimes I wish that I could just chill and just make music more of a priority.
Well,
but I really like doing it.
If I can give you any advice, it's in that regard.
Sure.
It's just do what you love, because I'm so fixated on this one thing that when it's not as successful as I want it to be, even though I feel like I'm to the point where, you know, it should kind of be happening,
yeah,
you know, after all these years, and you know, then I'm left with this disappointment of like, okay, do I stop? Do I keep going? Do I, you know, what the fuck do I do here?
Yeah.
I think to some extent, like me and Crosby talked about this on the previous episode, we're almost cursed with this obsession.
Yeah.
That we have to do it.
And you guys so, totally do.
Yeah. And so, if you are just doing things that you enjoy because you enjoy them, those are the times that I miss, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, so don't, I mean,
good point.
You know, take it seriously,
mm-hmm.
but, you don't have to let it consume you, you know?
Yeah. I actually can relate a little bit with Doug on one element, and I'll get to that for, but I also want to say that what I really want to do is be a teacher.
Okay.
And I really want to be a high school teacher, high school social studies, history, world history, American history, something like that.
I would love to take your class if I was back in 10th grade.
Yeah, and then maybe eventually be like a principal or something. But like that's the thing. That's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to go and do all the things I need to do and get my bachelor's and get my master's and go teach and maybe eventually get a PhD. And sort of whatever time I have outside of that goes to these other things. And the thing that I talked to Doug a little bit,
Ogar Burrell,
yeah, about, when a lot of his motivation to rap, and like make a record like Break the Bank, and you mm-hmm. can hear it on Break the Bank, is just seeing so many whack rappers.
Yeah.
Seeing so many guys who just flat out suck and think that they can do it. And it's just offensive on a certain level. It's just so annoying that it's like, oh my God, I have to grab a mic and just show these people that they suck, you know?
As a fan of the music, you mean uh-huh. it's insulting on that level?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, I guess. And so I can relate with that in that, like, I'm like, man, I'm doing this thing part-time and I'm better than some of these people out here, you know? And I hate to make it sound like that because, you know, I'm nothing compared to some guys who are really doing it.
The thing about rap, though, and the reason that you can get away with talking about it that way is because there's so much ego involved
in the culture
that it. I mean, it's built in that definitely. These guys that you know really aren't technically proficient on any level
uh-huh.
can be successful because you know they write catchy songs or they work with good producers who write catchy choruses for them or whatever. You know,
sure.
So you know. But you can only sit through so many of those shows before you want to be like, God damn it. I need to just get this out of my system. Like, fuck, you know,
yeah.
Murder some rappers right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I've heard him say that shit before.
It's yeah. It's funny.
Funny. Yeah. Like when you hear him and you wonder like, man, this guy just talks about destroying MCs like all the time. You're like
he does.
Yeah. Cause that was his motivation to start was
yeah.
to like, literally step the game up of uh-huh. the underground, you know? Uh-huh. And I think that's great. There's always going to be a place for that competitive side.
Definitely. Definitely.
Well, yeah. Anything you wanted to add?
Okay, I'll just ask you one question because you talked about
circumcised.
Coming into
if that's what you were.
You talked about coming into your style and your delivery and getting to a place where you feel good about it. And because I've enjoyed your stuff for the last 7 years or so, a lot, I just want to know what's one of your favorite tracks just in the way that your voice sounds and on a record.
Oh, interesting. I'm totally on the spot now.
Yep, out of left field.
I think that the song Famous Last Words,
cool.
I wouldn't change a thing about it. And I would lead that back to Break the Bank. You can hear the progression of that album is basically chronologically as we made it.
Cool.
So like the first couple songs, I'm like in my higher pitch, yelling, illusionist style.
Yeah.
And towards the Surprise back half of the album.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then towards the back half of the album, you know, I'm speaking in this voice, you know, I can tell by your beats that you got bad taste, you know, stuff like
mm-hmm.
that. And that was kind of the moment where I started to realize like, okay, maybe this is a more effective and comfortable delivery for me. So
cool.
I feel like, you know, two albums later on Famous Last Words, that's kind of where I found that that marriage.
Okay.
So I was totally nervous when you started asking me that question. I was like, oh shit, now I'm on the spot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, yeah. Good question.
Cool.
Sweet. Well, thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having me on this podcast. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. We're going to segue into the Endless Excuses remix, the Tommy V remix, our friend from Fake Four, featuring Ogar Burl and Gradient, with a little cameo from KI Design.
If it's the first of the month, pay your goddamn rent. If you're following your dreams, then run for president. Because talk doesn't matter if there isn't any action. I wanna be a scientist, not a chemical reaction. If it's the first of the month, pay your goddamn rent. If you're following your dreams, then run for president. Because talk doesn't matter if there isn't any action. I wanna be a scientist, not a chemical reaction. I'm tired of the endless excuses, the bullshit the average asshole produces. When I proclaim disdain for getting jacked off in place of progress, they ask me to back off in a manner so passive aggressive. I'd be less offended if they instructed me to fuck off with the first mention of responsibility or involvement. If you're not interested, I'll be fine. I'll find another way to solve it. But don't fucking leave me on or patronize me. It's a waste of time on either side. It might be a better idea just to be open and honest. And you can think I'm a prick, at least you know I'm calling how I see it. Never leaving you believe in anything. Other than exactly what I presented, reputation cemented, the antithesis of disappointment. I won't lower expectations, I reject your complacency for conformance. If it's the first of the month, pay your goddamn rent. If you're following your dreams, then run for president. Because talk doesn't matter if there isn't any action. I wanna be the scientist, not the chemical reaction. If it's the first of the month, pay your goddamn rent. If you're following your dreams, then run for president. Because talk doesn't matter if there isn't any action. I wanna be the scientist, not the chemical reaction. I wanna network, connect, and get shit done. Not sitting around like it comes when it comes. Where you at? I'm raring to go. We wanna get it while I got my game face, you know. But yo, waiting on a slacker ass individual. The task gets placed on a back burner. It turns to ash. I just write like a song and a half. And the time it takes to say you might wanna pass. Let me guess, something came up, you got sleepy. Least you could do is let me know you wouldn't see me, but you'd leave me hanging. I'm blowing in the wind, talk nothing but loose change until you cash in. You know me, I'm always down for action, relaxed in the back and poised to bring the passion. And I don't need an excuse to get busy, got enough of those coming from folks who fuck with me. If it's the first of the month, pay your goddamn rent. If you're following your dreams, then run for president. Because talk doesn't matter if there isn't any action. I wanna be a scientist, not a chemical reaction. If it's the first of the month, pay your goddamn rent. If you're following your dreams, then run for president. Because talk doesn't matter if there isn't any action. I wanna be a scientist, not a chemical reaction.
Message after the tone.
Oh, guys, I can't make it today. My cat got AIDS, and then it scratched my grandma. Dude, it looks like a volcano just blew up in my area. I can't make it today, sorry.
I'm gonna flow and throw bows till they put me in an old folks home. I ain't tryna be a broke mofo, I got goals, man. I'll be rhyming as an old man. You're the opposite of Sammy, cold hands. Man, you talk too much. A fair weather Mayweather with no boxing gloves. If you ain't got the hustle, boys, I don't wanna see ya. I'm steady making noise like an onomatopoeia, pia, pia. That's two direct hits. I prove to never misconstrue my message. Anyone never can tell I can get it with this crew I mess with. If we say we're doing something, we're doing that shit. Y'all sleeping? Get off your back, man, sit up. I talk a lot of shit, but I can back that shit up. Work, school, rap till my pen's low on ink. I'm writing till I never see my friends low on ink.
If it's the first of the month,
pay your goddamn rent.
If you're following your dreams,
then run for president.
Because talk doesn't matter if there isn't any action.
I wanna be the scientist, not the chemical reaction.
If it's the first of the month,
pay your goddamn rent.
If you're following your dreams,
then run for president.
Because talk doesn't matter if there isn't any action.
I wanna be the scientist, not the chemical reaction.